Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Jake, does Brock Lesnar beating up 8 to 10 poor security guys just standing there doing their job, just beating them senseless, was that a suitable payoff for an hour and 55 minutes of buildup that Lesnar had invaded the Roman Reigns locker room and destroyed everything?
It is kind of bizarre, isn't it, that they would make you wait all night for that? I mean,
yeah.
I guess it's just a big, long tease to, you know, they don't want to give away too much physical confrontation before WrestleMania. And I understand, you know, the logic in trying to keep that moment special when they lock up for the first time. But, man, it is a weird thing to base your show, you know, entirely around this sort of wait and see with Lesnar and Reigns, and you just don't pay it off. I mean, I guess, you know, the crowd got to see both of them, which is good because they reacted strongly to both guys. But yeah, I can't imagine, you know, dopey security guard number 7 being a satisfying conclusion to the end of the show for the live crowd. But they did react to it. I mean, you can't take that away from them. But it certainly wasn't what they were hoping for.
No. I mean, it is just WWE's a star-driven weekly entertainment series, and they, you know, build, they're differentiating themselves from their own past in some ways. And certainly from what, you know, AEW is doing with their, you know, just jam packed ensemble, you know, deep roster where you can go weeks at a time, not seeing, you know, some of the top stars in action and, but the shows are just packed with a different kind of style of pro wrestling. And WWE is even, I mean, we look at these WrestleMania night, you know, WrestleMania Saturday, WrestleMania Sundays, they're calling it. It's top heavy, and not super deep, to put it lightly, but they, you know, it's not an accident. I mean, this is what they have decided to do. They've cut the roster back and they're focusing on the same people every week and just finding, you know, kind of different ways to feature them. And, you know, whether that's, you know, well, I guess Ricochet sort of has a fresh feud going into WrestleMania here, but, you know, everyone else just kind of been fighting each other and battling each other. And they just kind of try to find new ways to feature it. And they hope that, like you say, the star power of that, you know, crowd reacting to seeing them in person is also translating to the TV audience, in that this is about seeing big stars show up and interact in some way physically, or in this case, not having a physical interaction. And that's enough to satisfy them, because they frame their top stars as big deals and big stars that you wait an hour, 45 minutes around. You wait around for an hour, 45 minutes just to see them show up.
Yeah, it wasn't even that. I mean, it's funny to listen to Roman in his, like, the promo, the first one that he and Paul delivered from inside the SUV, you know, where you know, Roman's talking about, yeah, I got to stop by the steakhouse and I'm going to go to an arena that we have no show at tonight just to hang out for a few minutes before I drop by Barclays. You know, it's a very weird kind of, okay, what are your priorities in life, man? Like, you're not even showing up to work until 15 minutes before the show's off the air. Like, it's just a weird way to present your biggest star.
You know, I didn't have a problem with it for this specific reason. Reigns is the, you know, co-top star in the company with Lesnar, and then you can, you know, say Charlotte and Ronda and Becky are right there too, in kind of a cluster, you know, with a certain order. But Reigns' personality, his gimmick, his persona is based around having agency, you know, being a guy who can show up late without fear of ramifications from Mr. McMahon or authority figures. And he didn't have a match scheduled. He was just sort of supposed to be there. And kind of like Bret Hart back in the day, you know, in the 90s, I reported on the fact that, you know, Bret constantly missed the time he was supposed to show up early afternoon because he could, you know, and he thought it was kind of silly and he got away with it. And other wrestlers, you know, some were okay with it. Some were like, that's not fair, but whatever. I mean, it is sort of like a tradition when you're the top star, you can kind of show up when you want. And the fact that, you know, he's bragging about going to this fine steakhouse and spending $5,000 on sides and then revisiting for nostalgia the sight of bloodying and bludgeoning Brock Lesnar, I mean, it worked for me. I get what you're saying in the sense that, hey, we have a two-hour live show. You're the top star. But part of Reigns is, like, what makes him Roman Reigns right now is that he can get away with it and flaunt it.
Yeah, it felt like it was more like he was talking down to Brooklyn than, you know, it was more like, yeah, I'll get there when I get there, man. Like, you're not as important to me as this steak and you know, touring the site of one of my greatest accomplishments. And that's fine. I just thought if you're going to have him go way out of his way to, you know, to ignore the show that he's presumably the biggest star of, at least have it serve the purpose of the feud. In this case, you know, wouldn't it be, you know, I'm too big for Brooklyn. I'm too big for Brock Lesnar. I don't need to be there. I'll see you at WrestleMania kind of thing. But the way they played it, it just came across like, yeah, I'm not that bothered by this whole SmackDown thing. I'll just be there when I show up.
Oh, what do you think of Reigns putting on a brave face when last week he was nervous? I think it's consistent in the sense that he was never in Lesnar's presence. And then he did show fear and run once Lesnar showed up. Because what they've been establishing is Reigns talks a big game, but faced with being in the presence of Lesnar, he then – and I think when he talks a big game, we're to believe he believes his own BS. But then reality strikes when Lesnar is in his vicinity. And you could say Reigns was claiming he visited MSG, claiming he went to a steakhouse. He may or may not have. I mean, that's not even all that important. But in reality, what he was doing was – avoiding being around Lesnar for, you know, not really delivering on the threat. He didn't exactly barge into the locker room. He made his way to the ring and then issued some threats to Lesnar from a great distance. So you can still look at this and say they're framing Reigns as, again, talking the talk, but running scared anytime Lesnar's close to him.
Yeah, it's an interesting bit of psychology because it is, you know, Heyman was outwardly terrified that Lesnar was even in the same vicinity of them, the same city at the same time. And when it comes to reassuring Heyman or his cousins, Reigns shows an incredible amount of strength and restraint. But when he's faced with Lesnar being real close by to him, he does now show, you know, that he's rattled and that he's afraid. And I mean, is that the right approach? I guess I don't know. You know, would the match be more interesting if he was refusing to back down, if he was confident? Maybe, but that's typically not how WWE portrays their heels, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's pause, introduce the show, and give out the phone number and encourage people to call us and join the conversation about tonight's show. Really, the last, to me, this is the end of WrestleMania hype on SmackDown because, I mean, it's not the end of it, but it's the end of the traditional, you know, two-hour show because next week is kind of the start of WrestleMania. You've got the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. I don't know if they're going to move a Ricochet IC title three-way.
They did announce it. It was the Ricochet and the two Los Lotharios in a triple threat next week on SmackDown.
No, and what I was actually going to say is I don't know if they're going to have that match and then also have some sort of rematch at Mania or if that's sort of going to be Ricochet's title defense for, quote, WrestleMania weekend and they're not going to put him on the card. I could see them going either way on that. But between that and the Hall of Fame, it's just – this is kind of the end of the normal pitch, in other words. Because a lot of this is just kind of filling time and spinning wheels a little bit to ideally add a little bit of heat and emphasize some of the main points for the matches that are already established on the card. And, you know, we got Raw, and then after that, next Friday kind of feels like the start of WrestleMania weekend, not a show hyping WrestleMania, even though, of course, they'll hype it. But, you know, I think you know what I mean.
Yeah, it almost feels like SmackDown is kind of taking the place of having pre-shows on the weekends, which I think I'm actually kind of okay with. It's going to be a long weekend anyway for anybody who's watching, or especially if you're covering WrestleMania. And so if you can watch SmackDown and kind of get your fill of all of the promo packages and a couple of matches, then maybe that's better than having to sit down 2 hours early for WrestleMania.
Yeah. So, let's pause, introduce the show here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, March 25th. 2022, and I'm Wade Keller, the founder, editor, and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter, a long-running weekly publication chronicling the professional wrestling industry since the late 1980s, and also the website pwtorch.com since 1999, and the host of a variety of podcasts throughout the week. Our podcast date back to 2003 for our VIP members, even before the word podcast was a term yet assigned to what we initially called audio shows. And those are almost all of them are available with VIP membership in our archives. If you want to do a deep dive into various eras over the last 19 years of our audio coverage, our podcast coverage of wrestling. I am the host of the Wade Keller Post Shows and Wade Keller Podcasts, including yesterday's Blue Logo Show, the Thursday flagship with Todd Martin, who is a PW Torch VIP analyst. We talked about the WrestleMania lineup in the final segment of the flagship. We also talked NXT, New Japan Cup, Raw, SmackDown, Dynamite, Rampage, and more. So check that out if you haven't yet. Just search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe. It's free. That's the Blue Logo Show. And then this is our Red Logo Show, our post-show format where we live stream the shows and then make them available for download later on each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And we also throw up some 5 and 10 years ago archives on both the Red and Blue Logo Show throughout the week too. So be sure you're subscribing to both of those. I also host a variety of VIP audio shows that come with VIP membership, like The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, and Wade Keller Hotlines. The Post Pay-Per-View Roundtable series, dating back to 2003, will continue a week from this weekend, covering WrestleMania Night 1 and Night 2. So it's a great time to go VIP and support us and get a lot in return. You can subscribe directly on our VIP website at pwtorch.com/goVIP. And that includes signing up by credit card, debit card, or PayPal. It's $9.99 a month or $99 for a full year. So you save about $20 by committing to a year. You also can sign up through Patreon at patreon.com/pwtorchvip. Same rates there, $9.99 a month or $99 a year. There actually is a couple lower tiers with some introductory benefits, including ad-free versions of all our free shows for just $4.99, so you can check that out. And finally, new this month is signing up directly on iPhone using your Apple account within the native Apple Podcast app. Just search PW Torch on your iPhone podcast app. We did a kind of a soft launch over the last few weeks, and it's gone smoothly, and the feedback is good so far. So check that out if that lack of friction for signing up is what's been stopping you, because all you got to do is search PW Torch in your iPhone Apple Podcast app and search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch VIP podcast feed and click subscribe and you're in. That also includes, by the way, a 3-day free trial if that is further incentive. The other voice you hear is Jake Barnett from ProWrestling.net. He is also a guest once a month or every 3 weeks here on our post shows, and it's always great to have his perspective on things. Jake, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Wade. I feel unaccomplished listening to everything that you're doing right now.
You are plenty accomplished. Talk about what you do for ProWrestling.net, by the way.
Yeah, I do the weekly written reviews of normally AEW Dynamite, but for the next couple of weeks due to some scheduling conflicts, I'm doing the written reviews for SmackDown, and I also join Jason Powell on a weekly basis for the .NET Weekly Podcast, which is the flagship audio show, and I also join Jason for post pay-per-view audio reviews of both AEW and WWE pay-per-views, and you can check out all of the membership information. The website is pwmembership.net. It gives a really nice written summary of all the benefits of being a .NET member.
Excellent. All right, so let's give out the phone numbers, or the phone number if you want to give us a call and join the program. The number is 347-215-8558. That is 347-215-8558. We are live after Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night. We start about 5 minutes after the shows go off the air, and you are always invited to listen live by calling that number. If you want to be on the show, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll flag you on our switchboard, and then we can bring you onto the show, and you can ask us questions or comment on the show. And, of course, you can also just download the show later and listen, which is what most of you do, because, some of you have things to do after the wrestling show's there, and you just listen the next day, and that works just as well, if not better, for everyone. Also, you're invited to email the show. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com is the email. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. You can email us during the shows, and we'll get to your emails during our post show. You can also, if you're live streaming the show and you hear us say something and you want to add your comments, agree, disagree, correct us, add details, whatever it is, or ask a question or topic we don't get to, that's the email. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. Let's see. I think that's all we need. Oh, and if you want to find the live stream, that's the other plug. Go to WadeKellerPostShow.com. You can also find direct links to the live stream at in my TV reports on Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown at pwtorch.com, our main website. That's pwtorch.com. And finally, you can also find that link on Twitter. I usually tweet out the link, the phone number, and the email on our Twitter account near the end of those shows, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. So just go to at pwtorch and follow us there. All right, let's get to our phone calls. And let's begin with Sean in Murfreesboro. It's been a while, Sean, since you've called the show that I posted. Welcome.
Wade, it really is. That's the first thing I thought about. It's like, man, I miss Wade. I got to talk to Wade tonight. Wade, it's always good talking to you. Jake, how are you guys doing?
We're doing good. I either heard you on another show or it was an archive show, and I was like, man, that's a voice I haven't heard in a while. I miss Sean. One of these days he's going to call. I always wonder what happens to some of our old callers. I feel like, you know, if you're a regular caller and you just stop calling, you owe me an email. Like, just tell me you're not going to call anymore and tell me why. I just want to know what you're – or if it's been a while, just check in and go, you know, I'm not into wrestling anymore or my schedule changed. I feel an attachment to our callers, and I wonder where they went, and I might never know.
No, I agree. Well, that's what I was thinking about Nick from Brattleboro. I know he called like maybe 3 weeks ago, but I feel like his schedule might have changed or something. So I'm always like, you know, Nick, you know, call back in, man. We miss you, especially WrestleMania. We want to hear what you're thinking about WrestleMania and kind of what's going on. And, you know, so I'm kind of with you. I always and wait, I will say really fast because it is funny. Every time I hear Javier's music, like it does, I am kind of jealous a little bit, even though Javier is awesome and he's been on the show forever and all that good stuff. But it does make me a little jealous. I'll be honest about it.
Good.
Oh, man.
That was the whole intent. I mean, when Mike Myers created the music, he said, I only did this because it's going to make Sean jealous.
No, it's good. He did right. He did good. I wanted to say, I guess bring up first of all, the show was just kind of okay tonight. I didn't really care for it. I didn't hate it. I was just kind of, you know, on it. But I wanted to go back to – I kind of wanted to first talk about Ronda's promo and, you know, what you guys thought about it, because Ronda, she's obviously, promo's not her strength. We all understand that. We all get that. I like when she got flustered and just been like, I don't care. Call the SmackDown Championship. This, what, women don't need to be involved, whatever. Just call the SmackDown Championship, you know, and it was just, but she tied it together. Okay. When her and Charlotte were doing the back and forth, I know some people were probably mad that Charlotte wasn't there in person, and I get it. You know, you're paying a ticket to go to Brooklyn. You kind of want to see Charlotte, and I get that. But I feel like they wanted to mix it up a little bit. You know, they've had a lot of violence, you know, the last couple weeks, and so they wanted to kind of tone that down a little bit going into the show. But what did you guys think about Ronda's promo? You know, are you with me that she's just, you know, I wish she wouldn't talk? I mean, she doesn't talk a lot, but what did you think about that, and what did you think of the build they're doing with Ronda and Charlotte here the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I mean, Ronda's strength, Jake, is not going to be talking like the typical human being on Earth. Like, she has a distinct cadence and delivery that stands out, but it's not consistent with what typically is considered a dynamic, charismatic pro wrestling promo. But I think there's some value in her being different. It might ultimately feel more authentic. Sometimes that's for better, sometimes for worse. But I mean, when I watch her, I feel like it's like when the waiter is walking with too many dishes and you just think things might fall, but you're sort of impressed when they don't. I'm waiting for there to be something that, you know, something that doesn't go quite right, or somebody shouts something and distracts her and she flips out. Like, there's sort of a tension also, but so that's more of a generic thing. But I mean, I thought tonight was fine. What do you think, Jake?
I think this feud is just boring me, man. Like, I want something interesting to happen between these two from a personality standpoint. I think they've tried to make up for the lack of any emotional output from Ronda in the promos with the physical beatdowns that she took, you know, both the attack backstage on top of the rental car and then, you know, the power bomb through the announce table the week after that. But Ronda doesn't show that she's at all affected by any of it. And I think, you know, Charlotte, if nothing else, is consistent. Like, you can set your watch to Charlotte Flair's character. She's going to deliver what Charlotte delivers, no more and no less. She doesn't really change all that much over time. And I kind of rely on Charlotte's feud partners to bring something interesting to the table to make her feuds tolerable to watch. And this just isn't it. Like, I don't think Ronda has been a great partner for Charlotte Flair, because Charlotte can only do so much within the constraints of the character that they built for her, and they don't want that to change. And Ronda Rousey, verbally, at least, you know, she's like a character on another show that's like hypnotized by an alien, and the alien is speaking through her body in a very monotone way. Like, she's reading a cue card that's very far away, and she has to focus on making sure she reads what the words are correctly. And the only real burst of personality that we saw from her at all was when she flubbed the promo and had to recover on her own, you know? Like, I think she needs a dose of personality that she just doesn't have. And maybe she'll find that over time, but she just does not seem comfortable on the microphone at all.
Does she have in her the ability to grow over time? Like, I'm not sure that I think this is what we're going to get at this stage. And before, it was the mystique from her MMA days and the crossover celebrity and being a special attraction. But she's kind of just a WWE wrestler now who has this background. Yes, but Kurt Angle had that background. And then he was seen as a full-time guy. Brock Lesnar, NCAA champion and eventually MMA fighter. But he's a WWE guy. But they were just phenomenal in every respect. Ronda has impressed us with her in-ring performances. But in the ring, standing there alone with a microphone, it still isn't, like you're saying, I think it's not appointment television. It's not, I'm going to be more excited by the match. It's to me, the waiter walking away with too many dirty plates stacked up that are just about to fall. Like, that's where I get compelled by her promos. It's just, she's so wound tight and it's the unexpected might happen, or things could go off course, but it's not, oh man, I came away from that really rooting for her and emotionally invested in seeing her get revenge. The idea that she's been breaking people's arms since age 14 and keeping track doesn't make me like her more. So like you said, the key is how unlikable can Charlotte be that you are just glad that somebody like Ronda, who enjoys breaking bones, will maybe break Charlotte's bone. But does Charlotte ever show vulnerability on the microphone the way, say, I talked about Reigns doing with Lesnar? Would that even be good for her character? I don't know, but I'm you know, all in all with you. I don't think this is like an A plus, A minus level build for the match, and yet it's pretty much headlining night one. I mean, it's an ensemble with Stone Cold and KO and Becky and Bianca, but you know, I think it's meant to be the biggest match.
Yeah, it's just kind of like an unseasoned steak, you know, like all the pieces might look like they're there. Like, maybe it's got, you know, it's got some, it's a good cut of meat and, you know, it was cooked well, but you bite into it and it's kind of flavorless, you know, like it needs something. And that's what I kind of feel like about this feud. Like, the components are there to have a good feud. You know, we know that Charlotte can go in the ring and that she delivers in big match situations, and her character work has been, if nothing else, consistently good for her, you know, as far as what she's delivered since winning the SmackDown Women's Championship. You know, Ronda has the star power. She gets reactions from the crowds. She still has name value, and yet there's just still something missing here. And I really do think it boils down to them not developing much of a personality for Ronda, or not doing enough to cover for the fact that she is unable to do that for herself.
Yeah. What has it, crossed your mind, like, what they could do that would make up for some of that, her shortcomings in that way?
Well, I think they need to do more video and less in-ring, let her try to memorize three paragraphs worth of lines and go out there and deliver it. You know, there was a time when they avoided doing that with Brock Lesnar, and they just had him do, you know, pre-tapes and backstage trash talk. And I think those are the things that Ronda might be better at if they gave her an opportunity to talk off the cuff, and then they just used what they liked out of whatever came out of her mouth. And because in this scripted environment where she's tasked with going out there and reciting a bunch of lines, it's just it doesn't suit her strength as a person. She's very dry. And you saw that even when she was working in film, you know, like it was like a wooden plank in front of the camera. And that's exactly what you see here.
Sean, back to you. Oh, you know what? I muted you because there was some background noise. Sorry, Sean. Go ahead. Now you're back.
Wade, the merits. No, I'm just kidding. with Charlotte, it's like there are things about her character that I don't like as well. Like, you know, kind of like what you said, Jake, as far as she's kind of the same all the time. The only feud I've really honestly, really truly enjoyed were the ones with Sasha and Becky, just because Sasha and Becky are so natural as wrestlers and what they do and their talking is so good. Even in the scripted environment, they build you, they get you invested in the matches. And even though I think Ronda and Charlotte are going to, like I said, in the ring at WrestleMania, they're going to do a great job of telling a good story, and the match is going to be really good, even though Charlotte's going to do maybe two or three moonsaults, which will annoy me even more. But I think it's going to be a good match, and I'm excited about it. But, yeah, I'm with you guys. The build has not been the greatest, but I wanted to get off and talk about something else. Going to the Happy Corbin video package, I thought was really funny. I mean, I did get a kick out of it. You know, his story from down Corbin to Happy Corbin. I mean, it was kind of dumb, but it was funny. Where do you think they can go next with Drew? Like, I mean, he's going to obviously beat Happy Corbin at WrestleMania, and Corbin is doing a good job with what he, like Alex said it in his report, as far as Corbin does a good job with what he's given to do. He works hard at his craft. I mean, he's really trying, and he's doing a good job. But this dude just does nothing for me with Drew. They've got to get Drew hotter. They've got to do something. Where do you think they would go after this? Because there's really nowhere, I feel like nowhere for him to go. There's really not a lot of opponents for him right now. So where do you think they're going to go after this? Because I'm assuming Drew beats Corbin pretty easily at WrestleMania. So where do you think they go?
Jake, what do you think?
I mean, is there anybody on the SmackDown roster that feels like they'd be a threat to Drew at this point? That he hasn't already had an extended feud and beaten at some point in his WWE career? Like, there's no natural fit. Like, could they be bringing somebody up from NXT after WrestleMania weekend? You know, could he be feuding with you know, somebody unexpected? I guess that's possible. But I think the biggest issue for Drew at this point is that he's been sort of saddled with this goofy kind of mid-card feeling shtick where he carries around a sword, and most of his character work is about, you know, his heritage and his history. And I think he's been kind of pigeonholed. He's not the cool babyface that was the WWE champion not that long ago. It feels like he's tumbled down the card, and so has how they interpret his character on screen. So I think if you want to rescue him, he needs to face a legitimate threat who can help raise his game and get him into some more serious character work. I just don't know off the top of my head who that would be.
I mean, do they shift to Roman right away? Like, is that, or, you know, pretty quick? Is it just Drew and Roman, and they build the SummerSlam, and Drew's just been sort of on the back burner, so to speak, you know, spinning his wheels a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, Corbin and Moss have been reasonably entertaining for, you know, what WWE is presenting right now in terms of the tone of their product, and Drew is spinning his wheels too. I don't think he's been damaged, but I don't think there's a like this groundswell of people going, I can't wait until Drew takes on Roman. But, you know, WWE might be able to get us there. I don't think they're working from, like, a bad position, but I don't think there's, like, pent-up anticipation either.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could go to Roman, but, I mean, it just feels like, you know, Sheamus would have to drop a considerable – or, excuse me, McIntyre would have to drop a considerable part of his act at this point. He can't go out there waving around a sword and, you know, and that kind of stuff in a feud with Roman Reigns, because – I mean, the Roman character would have to mock him mercilessly for being a goof, right? And you don't want to do that to a guy who is going to be your top babyface challenger. And so, yeah, I guess if you're going to go to the Roman feud right away, I think you're going to have to take a kind of a hard left with what they've been, you know, at least from where they are currently with McIntyre's character.
Sean, does anyone come to mind for you?
No, they don't. That's why I was asking, because, you know, there's just nobody. And WWE has made their roster so thin right now that they've just put themselves in a corner. And like you guys said, and I've agreed with you the entire time with the, you know, with the Drew sword initially, it didn't bother me, I guess, at first. But then they've used it so much, and it's just gotten so corny and so dumb that it's like Drew is just so much better than that. And I want him to get rid of that and be more of a serious character. And I think if they go to Roman, which I guess they might have to, that's the only option they would have. And Drew's got to get more serious and kind of build back his persona that he had when he was the champion. So I'm curious where they go with it, but they're in a bad spot there. Real quick, I wanted to ask a funny question. Are you guys, I'm glad Xavier came back. I'm glad he's doing okay, but Wade, I've been with you. I can't stand his character right now. I just think it's awful. I think it's abysmal. I think it's just turn off the TV bad that I just don't want to watch. Do you think there's any way they get rid of New Day at some point soon, like sometime after WrestleMania, like have Xavier somehow turn on Kofi or something? Because New Day just bores me at this point. What do you guys think about that?
Well, you're singing to the choir, as they say. Jake, I was disappointed the King getup was still on Xavier's body as he walked out. I don't know. It's just, it's dumb. What do you think?
I mean, King Corbin kind of made that whole King gimmick work for a short period, but it quickly runs out of gas on anybody. And I don't think Xavier Woods is any different. You know, I guess they did sort of give you what you asked for. You know, they had Kofi and Woods playing these sort of goofy royal characters for a while as a break from, you know, from their standard New Day shtick, but it wasn't any better. I mean, I think, you know, a return to form might be better than them, you know, continuing on with the whole King and whatever they called Woods. Was Kingston a knight or something? I can't remember what kind of goofy title they tried to give him on screen, but yeah, it just didn't click. And I don't know if you're ever going to see them turn on each other. I think they've been vehemently against that as a group, and I wouldn't expect that to happen, particularly with Big E being out with the neck injury and probably wanting to do a reunion when he comes back. It would be real awkward to have the two of them having a long feud while he was out on injury. So I think they're probably just going to end up being reshuffled into the tag division at some point. I don't know if we're going to see some kind of match again between them and Sheamus and Ridge and Butch next week, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be escaping that feud anytime soon.
Yeah. All right, Sean, anything else for us?
Yeah, then the last topic I was going to bring up real fast was, you know, with Ricochet, I was happy with Ricochet winning the title just because, like you guys had initially brought up as far as, I mean, they're doing something with him, but like Todd has said, like, he just lost so many times. Like, he just doesn't mean as much anymore. And then they come out with, they mess up and they say he's going to fight Humberto first, and now he's not Humberto Carrillo anymore. He's just Humberto. They take the last names away, which to me is so stupid. So they go, they say it's Ricochet and Humberto, then they come back and it's actually Ricochet against Angel, and then, you know, they have the distraction finish. He gets rolled up real quick, and then he's dumb and says, "Oh, I want to take Humberto on now, even though they're going to have Angel with him." And then the same thing's going to happen, and it just makes Ricochet look stupid. I just don't know why they do this. I don't know why they go this route and think, "Oh, it's these championship contender matches, he's going to lose." It's just so dumb. What do y'all think about that? I'll leave you with that, Wade. Always appreciate talking to you, man. I got to listen to the Scott Hall, the first part of your interview with him. I'm excited that you're getting to put those out, because Scott Hall was awesome in the ring and just a great personality, and it's just sad he's gone. Jake, it's always good to talk to you, man. Hope you guys have a good night. Thanks for taking
Sean,
the call.
Sean, had you heard the Scott Hall interview before?
No, I never had. That's why I was so excited for getting to hear it, because I didn't know a lot about his career until I dug in. So.
And, I mean, he is just a great storyteller. I mean, like, the detail and the just – so it's Scott Hall is so Scott Hall, like unapologetically just blunt. And the more you listen to this, I mean, it was around 7 hour interview, and we've got about 6 hours of the audio that has survived technology. And I mean, it just, he's so smart. I just remember hearing that about him for so long. And when I got the chance to interview him back in 2006, and it was the first time he had sat down and talked with anyone for longer than, an 8-minute fluff publicity interview. And we're just going to do, I was hoping to get him for an hour and a half. Like, that'd be great. And we did 2-3+ hour sessions, and he really just, I just think it's a remarkable window into why Scott Hall, why he frustrated people so much in a lot of ways, because, he was his own worst enemy in some ways, but not people's favorite person to be around, but he was so smart. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say to you really fast, like, I've been a member, with you for 5 years, and I just appreciate that even Vince and Eric, Eric Bischoff and Scott and Kevin and all those guys they think about you so highly for what you do that they are willing to sit down with you for that long a period of time and just talk wrestling with you and talk about their career and what it meant to them and how they got into everything. And so I just appreciate you being able to do that and being able to share that with members and being able to have them go back and listen to that. And it means a lot that you're willing to go out there and get that stuff, and you care about the people and what they're trying to do and their love for the business. So I want to say I appreciate that a lot.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And I mean, I listened back to the interview and I was just like, man, it was good. I'm not like trying to put myself over, because Scott just surprised me. I was ready with 7 hours worth of questions. I just didn't expect he would give it to me, So at first I'm like trying to like pace it and get the big top, the topics I definitely wanted to get in. And then I realized he was settling in and enjoying it. So, I'm glad that the audio, not just the transcript and the newsletters, is available. And yeah, we put up like the first 70 minutes of it a couple days ago for VIP members, and another 4 or 5 hours is going to go up in coming days and weeks as soon as I get it formatted. So anyway, I'm glad you enjoyed it, because I enjoy listening back to it and doing it at the time. So anyway, Sean, I appreciate your kind words very much. You mean a lot.
No, appreciate you guys. Thanks for taking my call as always.
Yep, you bet. All right, our number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. You are invited to call and participate on tonight's show and our future live post shows. All right, up next, we're going to go to Evan in Chicago. Evan, thank you for calling. Good to hear from you. What did you think of SmackDown tonight?
Wait, tonight on Fox was so delicious. I can't even begin to tell you what I think of it. Oh, my God. First of all, how are you doing? I missed you.
Well, Evan, I got to say, how were the sides? I know the main course was good, but did you get sides also of SmackDown?
Oh, no. I think I've dined very sufficiently on what I've seen here tonight. Look, tonight got very, very, very personal. And I believe from the standpoint of where we got Roman Reigns in the ring talking up a storm, as she usually does, which I'm very happy to see, because sufficiently, again, he's gotten better on the microphone. And not even as time progressed, but he's always been a fair player when it comes to shooting his shot to where he needs to score. And honestly, if anybody can give anybody any credit to his success, confidence-wise, I'd say I wouldn't rather have anyone backing me but Paul Heyman from a professional standpoint. And I give him praise for what he's done with both Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, because Brock since he came back, he's had a ball. And as personal as it has gotten, as soon as they said, we need to put two in a match against who? For what? Brock Lesnar said, let me stop playing and go back to SmackDown, where I knew from the jump he got back in his bag. And from there, you got to see exactly what it is that he needed from not only himself, but from the people that got him back where he wanted to be in the first place before he even decided he even wanted to retire. He came back knowing that he would have a good time working with people like Sammy. And now he's back in the title hunt all of a sudden because we're still going through the times that we're going through, unfortunately. Now here we are after the Royal Rumble, winner takes all at WrestleMania. This is getting to the point where I believe that we are mixing in the best possible outcome for the future of not only the business, but for the future of these two gentlemen moving forward. And I believe Brock Lesnar, even where he is right now, is standing on top of so much that he has already done for people within his time that he and Roman Reigns have both become pioneers of their time. Now, think about the bloodline for a second. Think about what they've accomplished. The way that Jimmy and Jay have worked with their cousin, and now they have formed this group that have totally taken over SmackDown. Looking at it from a perspective of any other fan that is not in the arena, I say that is the best possible perspective on the product that I can see as a family that naturally grew into the business and formed a bond from the business. This is the most beautiful piece of product that I can see on...
Okay, so Evan, I want to jump in. I want to jump in because we got about a three-minute limit before we get to actually wanting to interact with you. Otherwise, I'll forget what I want to bring up. So pause for a second. Gather your thoughts. We'll come back. Yeah. Yep. So I want to throw to Jake on this because this WrestleMania and Evan's comments are underlining this is as much of a let me ask it, is this as much of a one match show in the way that it's being hyped that you can remember? I mean, even I'd have to go like look back at some of the lineups, you know, Cena Rock, for instance, Cena Rock, you know, the other very big main events. But it does feel like, and this isn't necessarily a credit to Lesnar and Reigns only, it's also a discredit to the roster depth and the job WWE has done saving matches, and some of this has to do with Saudi Arabia and spending a lot of dream matches and appearances there on those shows. But does this feel like, from a WWE hype perspective, as much of a one-match show or one primary match as the draw, setting aside the two-night issue with that, that you recall? And how are Lesnar and Reigns doing in terms of being era-defining megastars? Does it feel like WWE is overhyping it in order to make up ground because they realize they kind of need to hype it because it doesn't speak for itself? Or are they hyping it because they know they've got something really good going?
It's a difficult one to call because you have – I think the bloodline has been really successful. In the respect that they get huge reactions everywhere they go. Like people are into the Roman character. They're into the sort of crime boss sort of aspect of it. Paul Heyman as his consigliere of sorts, if you're gonna make a Godfather reference, or and the Usos as his lieutenants, there's a familiar storytelling beat that they've hit with that I think crowds are attracted to. And he does feel like a major star. The heel turn has done wonders for Roman Reigns, as has the title reign and some of the very good matches and feuds that he's had along the way. Does this feud with Lesnar feel like it's being overhyped? I think it does feel like they're overcompensating a little bit by calling it the biggest WrestleMania match of all time and things of those sorts, where it's like, I think the match could speak for itself if they allowed it to go in that direction of being a little bit more personal. You know, they I think they started something like that a few weeks ago at MSG where Lesnar was bloodied and then he called out, you know, that he's out for blood. And yet the trash talk hasn't really gotten personal. You know, they haven't gotten past that sort of skin deep level. It feels like a story that's happening without the two characters really attempting to understand each other more deeply than they already do. And so in that respect, I think they've left something on the table to a degree. You know, they haven't really dug in as deeply as they could, and maybe they had no intention of doing that, but I think it is a little bit overhyped in the sense that they're desperately trying to make this match feel bigger than the story that they're telling with it. But do I think it would be a success? Yes, undoubtedly. You know, Lesnar and Reigns are the two biggest stars in the company, and I guess by default that makes them the two biggest stars in wrestling. You know, nobody is protected more than those two. And so a showdown between them in a title unification match at the biggest show of the year is by default a really big deal. And so I think it's going to get an incredible crowd reaction when it happens live on pay-per-view. Now, could it have been done better? Yes, I think that's a fair statement as well. But I don't think it's been a failure by any stretch.
Who are AEW's top three stars?
I mean, if I'm picking them today, I would say CM Punk, Hangman Page, and then there's like a real hard kind of choice there you have to make. There's probably three people that would be on my list to put at number three, but I'll just go ahead and say Jon Moxley.
Yeah, because, I mean, I could have almost just as easily said Bryan Danielson, MJF, and the Young Bucks, or, well, probably not the Bucks lately. But, you know, like a little broader sense. Like, it really is an ensemble. You know, like I think if you look at the top 10 stars in AEW and you ask people pick the top three, I don't know how many combinations of three that you can get out of 10 numbers. I'd have to, like, think about that. But let's see. You'd have, I can't do it in my head right now, but it's a lot. And I think you would get a wide variety. In WWE, you just aren't. You know, there's a top five. You know, it's Becky, Charlotte, Ronda, Lesnar, Reigns. And, you know, there might be some, you know, Drew fans, or who else would even, Sasha
Bobby
fans.
Lashley, Seth Rollins.
Bobby
AJ
Lashley,
Styles.
Seth.
Yeah, I mean, you might see some people picking oddball characters, but clearly, you know, those five that you named are the ones that are protected by the company the most.
And that's kind of what I do mean. I'm not asking for people's favorites, but like who are just clearly WWE's top pushed and protected people. And in AEW, it's more solid. And I'm not saying one's better or worse, but that's where I think Evan's point resonates, which is WWE has in Lesnar and Reigns two top attractions who just feel like they are top attractions. And you can run a wrestling company that's very top-heavy if you have the right people on top. I'll throw back to Evan for some follow-up. Evan, try to keep it kind of brief. Don't you know, do another 3 minutes on us here before you throw to us.
Yeah,
that's our job.
Yeah, I got you. And I was just going to say to that point, I don't think any favoritism or protection of the sort from a fan perspective would go to names like Lesnar and Reigns, or even Charlotte and Ronda. Because these are guys, again, that, you know, put work in the way they put their work in, and, you know, they're not given as due credit as they should from where they feel like they best need it. And I can give it to them because I see the way they work. Even back when Paul Heyman brought Brock Lesnar back, and, you know, you're now getting into it with authority figures and trying to figure out, you know, what am I doing from here? There are ways around things, and the way that Brock Lesnar maneuvered his way around it, I can say I'm proud of how far he came, and I just can't wait to see where this is going, even past WrestleMania, the night after WrestleMania, and therefore after.
Who is left, Evan, that you want to see Roman Reigns against and Brock Lesnar against once they're not fighting each other?
Oh, man, if you're going to ask me that question, to be honest with you, I'm ecstatic to see The Rock at WrestleMania. If that happens,
oh, sure, of
course,
yeah.
Believe, trust and believe, yeah. Trust and believe, we're going to have a good time. But, you know, jokes aside, whatever they may be about The Rock showing up, if there are any, I'd say that's something that we would still be ecstatic to have on our radar. And, you know, it's just there, and we're loving it, and I would love to have it.
Besides that, they've got time to fill. There's like, you know, another 40 weeks out of the year and other pay-per-views, other premier live events, premium live events. Who else?
Who else would I love to see? Man,
yeah, against Lesnar and against Reigns. I mean, I ask that because it's related to your point, which is, are Lesnar and Reigns so big and so protected that once you get past them facing each other, the next name is Rock, and after that, it's like, is anyone worthy?
Man, this year, I believe that it belongs to names like Seth Rollins. I believe if you give him the torch again and he runs with it, I can't unsee on either side where he would go with it. But, you know, if you throw that name in the hat, he's got, you know, victories, losses, whatever you may want to count. He has history with both of these men. And as progressive as he has been on Raw, he still doesn't have a solidified spot at WrestleMania. So where the wind may take us, I can't wait for that to unfold as well. And again, that name has to be in the hat for both Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, even after the unification.
Yeah. Okay, so Evan, anything else you want to bring up before we move on to other calls?
No, man. Thank you again for having me. I miss you. I tried to call in, I guess, for another show, but you know, I missed you that day. But you know, I'm glad to hear your voice again. So thank you for having me.
Thanks, Evan. Good to hear from you. All right, our number 347-215-8558. It is not too late to call or push 1 on your keypad if you're live streaming us. If you've downloaded the show, I can confirm it's too late. All right, we'll go next to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, we have not talked about the women's match, the Fatal 4-Way yet. Shayna Baszler hitting her head on the floor, and it felt like it was a main event. I'm sorry, Kyle, I'm stepping on introducing you here. Felt like it was kind of a let's throw a bunch of wrestlers out there as our supposed main event, but really the main event is what happens when Reigns shows up. But I don't know if you want to talk about that or other stuff, but welcome.
Hey, that took forever. I felt like I was kind of wasn't even paying attention. That last call was kind of annoying me a lot, honestly, personally. But anyway, I want to talk about that, but mainly the WrestleMania card stuff. I actually wrote down what's happening throughout the entire matches and what's happened on the show. And honestly, it's really Raw heavy of matches that I'm personally looking forward to the most. And it's really much Raw heavy. I'm looking here at Becky and Bianca, Edge and Styles, and even the women's tag team title match. That could be a fun match too. And there's everything just on the Raw side for WrestleMania is more intriguing than it is for SmackDown, because all you care about is Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, and that's just so it makes it. And SmackDown honestly was really boring. Besides the Fatal 4 that happened tonight, that was really good and fun. I'm glad that Sasha won. It's just, but other than that, it's just, I was watching SmackDown so bored because I didn't care about anything at all. Everything about SmackDown, even with Roman Reigns, bores me to tears. It's just, I don't know, everything about SmackDown doesn't interest me at all. I watched that, I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever. It's just not for me. And then they really need something to change after WrestleMania. Like I've been saying this for months now at this point, where it's just about Roman Reigns, and that's all well and good, but it doesn't interest me. I know he's the biggest star of the company, and that's fine. But that's all they've been focusing on, because that's, you know, It goes back to really to, I'll say, the Royal Rumble a little bit with Seth Rollins. I thought it was going to lead to something with that, and it never did. And now Rollins is going to be potentially facing Cody Rhodes, which is still questionable, but whatever. I don't know. I think it's just so weird how the year started with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins and where we are now, where it's just not really about, it's just about Roman Reigns and no one else matters, and that's not good. So when you think about that entire thing heading into WrestleMania, just where it's going for after WrestleMania and throughout the rest of this year, really.
Jake, do you think WWE has a really clear plan of what they want to do after WrestleMania? I assume they do. And I think safely, I assume they do. But I don't know that they're showing their hand yet.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like, man, do they need like a roster shakeup again?
I
don't know if that would be just a few strategic pieces moving around. I don't think they want to do another draft, but I think they have some serious deficits on SmackDown that can't go unresolved. You know, they just don't have any credible baby faces to face Roman Reigns post WrestleMania. I guess presuming that Brock Lesnar is not going to be full time, at least not immediately after WrestleMania. Maybe he'll take some time off, but you know, there's just nobody there. You know, you got Drew, I guess, but he would feel like a consolation prize to Lesnar. And then you have to deal with the fact that you have a unified championship. How is that going to be addressed? Are they going to split it up right away again? Are they going to create another championship? There's a lot of unanswered questions in that regard, but I think SmackDown has been painfully deficient on baby faces for Roman Reigns, and they haven't really spent enough time developing the tag division or whatever is happening around Ricochet with the Intercontinental Championship to make me feel confident that they have strong feuds planned coming out of WrestleMania.
Cody would help. Veer might help. There's not a lot of others on the sidelines. I mean, Big E's going to be a hero and welcomed back in a big way. I think he's, you know, you don't want to go through what he went through, but I think he might end up in a better place than he would have been had he not gotten hurt. But, I mean, who else is – and, you know, I mean, I think Sami Zayn is so thoroughly entertaining, and coming out of the Knoxville feud, that all of a sudden he gets to be in the mix in a different way. And I at some point, I don't know if it'll be as entertaining, but at some point he might just become popular enough to be, you know, a top – almost top-level babyface coming out of this, because he's just so thoroughly entertaining, even if he feels like sort of marginalized in a in-ring credibility standpoint with the way he's portrayed. In WWE, they just don't put a premium on that. They sort of believe they can just hit a reset button on someone and put them in a – and if they're entertaining in the way WWE asks their talent to be entertaining, they can just position them higher and people will accept it if that person is talented, and Sammy is, and I think fans are sort of forgiving in that way. But – I mean, you know, Sasha's back. I guess and Bayley. Bayley adds, she's the biggest name on the sidelines right now that is jumping out to me.
I was just going to say
Asuka, maybe Lacey Evans if she comes back, but Asuka's not anywhere close to Bayley. Am I safe in saying that? That in terms of, like, the impact that she'd have? I mean, I want Asuka back. I think she's talented, but Bayley is someone who carries TV time the way WWE asked their talent to carry TV time much more effectively.
Yeah, I think Asuka might end up back on Raw. I think she'd be a much more effective character if she came back and just beat the tar out of, you know, the baby who I, you know, Bianca, who I assume will be the babyface Raw champion after WrestleMania.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, they have some cards to play. Cody, Veer, Bayley, Asuka.
I mean, do they have anybody in NXT that you would consider moving up? I guess you have Gunther. I mean, he could be an impact guy if they treat him the right way.
Yeah, and I mean, I think Tommaso Ciampa might be headed that direction.
LA Knight potentially as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're high on LA Knight, and I mean Bron Breakker, you know, might be, maybe he's next for Roman. Honestly, you know, they might bring him up and have him just be shot to the top. I mean, I wouldn't rule that out either. Maybe he goes through someone like Seth first. or ends up the Raw champion, and they keep him away from Roman until he is established as the top star in the other brand. I mean, so it doesn't take a lot to freshen up SmackDown and Raw, for that matter, the way WWE operates. It's not about a lot of depth. It's about freeing up Sammy to be in a new feud, having Bobby Lashley, that's significant, having Bobby Lashley and Big E return, having Bayley and Oscar return, having Cody show up, having Veer show up. I mean, the more I talk it through, the more I think if everything fell into place, that, you know, by midsummer, if you have Veer, Cody, Big E, Lashley, Braun Breaker, Tommaso Ciampa, Gunther, if I didn't say them, Bayley and Oscar, AJ Styles getting pushed against Sami Zayn in a fresh situation. I mean, I think all that, and Ricochet is getting a more serious push. I think they're committed to that. I mean, I think they might actually be okay, and they're up to something with Madcap Moss. I think they have something with Rick Boogs. You know, match quality wise, you know, that's not a big asset, but in terms of just doing storylines with them, I think they have faith they can get something out of them. So I don't know. Like, yeah, I mean, the more I talk it through, the more I think the way Vince McMahon has this show structured and his writing team have the show structured, they have enough pieces that they can put into play to make things seem pretty fresh after Mania.
Well, they have the pieces. It's just, you know, do they use them effectively? And that's been their Achilles heel. It's like, there's an immense amount of talent on this roster, but I mean, you've had Corbin being insufferable on TV for months when he was one of the more effective heels they had, you know, less than, you know, a year ago. And so I think they have people who are in the wrong characters right now that need some freshening up, and then the show would improve dramatically.
Yeah. Do we know what happened to Elias, by the way?
I assume he's still out wandering in the woods. That's the last time we've seen him. We don't know what happened to Elias.
He hasn't posted on Twitter since like October or something. Might even be further. I mean, so that's just weird. Let me look it up here. August of 2021 was his last retweet. So, I mean, I hope he's okay. I mean, it's weird.
I think his last televised appearance was a vignette where he buried his old character, right?
I know.
And that's the last we saw him.
He fell in the grave, and no one's been able to reach him. His phone died. I don't know. All right. Anyway, Kyle Beck.
I've been, you know, playing about SmackDown for long. Sorry about that. So I only talk about the Charlotte Ronda thing, and I have to say this for weeks too. This is completely boring as well, I feel, because especially after watching Monday and watching Becky's promo compared to everything where Charlotte did last week on SmackDown and what Ronda said, it's just so disinterested. If this is the main event, that's laughable. I think it's completely pathetic that they had to say, you know what, Ronda's a well-known name. Charlotte is a well-known name. Put them in the main event just because we say so. That's what it feels like. It is that, and so I, you know, you would hope that Becky and Bianca will open the show and not be in the mid card because I'm more invested into what they're doing and their feud. And even though they've gotten more interested into it because they both could talk. I've been all high on Becky since she debuted, and Bianca, I've been high on her since her time on NXT. So it just still amazes me that, you know, the fact that you have Ronda win and she had to choose to pick either Becky or Charlotte. She decided to say Charlotte, and ever since then it's been what, downhill ever since she won the Rumble. And so if she wins the championship, it will be a tough hill to climb, because I think Sasha and Naomi are going to win the tag team championships, and if they do, have Sasha probably go face Ronda and like what she did in 2020 when she faced Oscar for the Raw Women's Championship as tag team champion. What do you think about that whole feud heading in, you know, with the that's been built up, because it's not been on that great, I feel, anyway.
Yeah, Jake, do you want to add anything to that?
To the tag team title feud, or to Becky and Sasha?
Just the Charlotte Ronda feud and how it's been.
The idea of Charlotte Ronda being the main event, and I'll throw in, I was going to say, you know, Becky Bianca. Do you think Becky Bianca is potentially a match that fans are more invested in emotionally because of what we talked about earlier with Charlotte and Ronda.
Yeah, no, I assume that Charlotte and Ronda is going to close the show because that's been their, at least that's been what's been reported for months now. And I don't think I've ever seen that, you know, anybody report credibly that that's changed, but
yeah.
I don't know, you know, if I would want to be in their position, because I think Becky and Bianca has an opportunity to be a better match. And I think it's been the better feud dramatically. Now, it hasn't been perfect, no, and I think they really do need a strong go-home segment on Monday to really drive that feud home. But I think Becky has been giving some really good individual performances on the microphone, and Bianca has held up her end of the deal. I'm just waiting for one really fiery performance from her to send it home.
Yeah, yep. Kyle, anything else you want to bring up or have us respond to?
Yeah, it's just, I guess is headed for next week for both Raw SmackDown. Call it them Raw WrestleMania, Raw WrestleMania SmackDown. Why bother saying that? You already have WrestleMania Backlash in May. Why would you have these whole WrestleMania taglines with these shows? I don't know why I decided to do that versus last year. I think it's completely stupid. But I am looking forward to at least next week's SmackDown. That could be at least a better show because of, you know, they have both brands on the show, so maybe it'll be a little bit more better because it also could be a better show. But I am hoping for you know, next week on Raw and SmackDown for it to be completely, or, you know, 2 weeks to be better and more different because of, but mainly SmackDown because of I'm just. I think the last point I'll leave you with this is that if Roman Reigns becomes both Universal Champion and WWE Champion, if the thought of him going back to both shows back and forth every single week, is that too much? Because I feel like it will be, and you know they have to split the title at some point, you would think. So is that really a good idea? A lot of people want to see it because they want to see it now, but let's just say in the summer, people will still be okay with that. I'll leave with that, but thanks for my call.
Thanks, Kyle. We're talking more about what happens after WrestleMania than anticipating WrestleMania, which is not a great sign, but what we're talking about is tied to WrestleMania in this respect because they're promising that it is a winner-take-all unification match. Roman Reigns is saying, I'm going to be WWE Universal Unified WWE Universal Champion. How long do you think it takes for them to split the titles up? And do you have any ideas of how it would make sense to do so, Jake?
Well, I guess, you know, they've been saying the entire time that Roman has been talking about the final image of WrestleMania being him standing over Brock Lesnar holding both championships, and they haven't really gone out of their way to say that they're going to, you know, unify the titles in a way where Roman is going to carry one championship and the other one is going to be retired. And, you know, professional sports have sort of gone about that both ways at times. You know, you can be in boxing, you can be a unified champion and carry belts from multiple different sanctioning bodies simultaneously. And we've seen two division champions in UFC where people have carried multiple titles. And so I guess I would assume that somebody ends up challenging Reigns and winning the WWE title away from him, whether that's at Backlash or, you know, and maybe they'll do what they did with Becky after WrestleMania 35, and Roman will have to have two title defenses in one night. There's a lot of possibilities there. But I don't foresee them having two television partners in one championship and not having the champion appear full-time on both shows, which I don't think Roman Reigns would be. And maybe he'd be willing to do it for a while, but I can't see him doing that full-time into the future.
And it would burn him out as a character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think twice a week is too much.
Yeah, especially when you're talking about the kind of segments that, you know, he'd be expected to put together as a world champion on both shows. And so I think it'll be fairly quickly, you know, maybe one pay-per-view, WrestleMania Backlash, we'll see a new champion crowned. Or maybe they'll take a completely different approach and they'll create another championship for Raw and they'll have a tournament. Who knows? There's a lot of different approaches they could take.
Yeah, I don't think they would have done this without having an idea of what they want to do. So I think they have a plan. It doesn't mean it's a good plan. It doesn't mean it won't be groan-inducing. It doesn't mean it won't undercut future claims to big title versus title unification matches where they're just sort of counting on viewers not remembering or caring. All of that is possible. But I think, you know, they've got an idea in mind. And I am curious to see what they do. I mean, it might be really awful and groan-inducing, or it might be clever or satisfying. And I'm not going to judge till I see. But I don't see an obvious way to do it without having some fans go, God, I traveled to Dallas and want to see history made, and history sure didn't last very long. Yeah. All right. Let's see. Alan from Cambridge, Ontario, emailed about the women's division. Let me pull this up, or the women's match on night one. I've heard you discuss which women's title match should main event night one of WrestleMania. I think no matter what happens, it'll be Charlotte and Ronda. During Ronda's first promo after winning the Rumble, she said one of the reasons to pick Charlotte was to have Becky be in her usual undercard and not get Becky the main event spot against her. So I assume that spot was promised to Ronda when she agreed to come back. I think that if Steve Austin is showing up to beat up Kevin Owens in his jeans and T-shirt, then Charlotte and Ronda is last on the show. If Austin is showing up in black trunks and a vest, then I think the main event, and I think that is the main event, and Ronda Charlotte is second to last. And holy crap, I think WWE and Brock is lucky if a piece of glass didn't hit Brock in the eye. I assume it was trick glass, but it seemed kind of risky. Thanks for all the stupendous podcasting. Thank you, Alan. So, you know, we talk about the main event on night one, and one, you know, Jake, react to what you think about his logic, and if that kind of creates a bit of a storyline next year with Ronda going, you know, I'm going to welcome you to the main event of WrestleMania, Becky. It's taking me to bring you there, and that can be sort of her way of needling Becky. I don't know how that will go over with fans, but, you know, we'll see. But so you have that to comment on, and then just also the possibility of Austin KO ending night one. Because it's night one, can you actually end without a match, but just KO taking a bunch of bumps for Austin?
I would think that would be a huge disappointment. I'm a big Steve Austin fan. You know, he was what sort of ignited my interest in wrestling in the late 90s, you know, after taking a hiatus from watching. So I can't imagine having a guy come in for a non-match when he's in his late 50s and pushing your own marquee talents out of the main event slot. That would, you know, disrespectful for one thing. I mean, and you know, Steve Austin's a legend, and maybe people would get over it, but I just can't imagine them having a talk show, main event, WrestleMania. It's still called the KO show. It's not a match. And so I would say that that's very unlikely. You know, it's an excellent segment to give a breather in between a couple of other matches and keep the crowd hot. But I think the long-term plan, you know, for Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey has to be finally getting a singles match at WrestleMania. And the correct configuration for that match is Becky returning to form as a babyface and challenging a heel Ronda Rousey.
Yes,
and
it is.
I think your logic in that, you know, Ronda welcoming her back into the main event and talking down to Becky along the way and feeding and fueling her, you know, her anger and being slighted is the way to go. And, you know, where do they go with the other women's championship on that show? I mean, I think the two-night WrestleMania is going to continue, and I'm sure we'll see, you know, Sasha involved in another WrestleMania main event along the way at some point. But I think, you know, Becky and Ronda, the match that everybody wanted for 35, is probably going to be one of your WrestleMania main events next year.
Yeah, yep. All right, Chris Milwaukee emailed and said, tonight's show really frustrated me. WrestleMania is a two-night event, and as of right now, it looks like both of the mid-card championships are not on WrestleMania. Finn Balor and Damian Priest are currently scheduled for the Battle Royal, which seems to indicate that the match isn't going to happen, and Ricochet is in this weird triple threat with a tag team. If both of these titles matter so little that they can't make it onto Mania when we have to endure Dominic Mysterio fighting Logan Paul, why do they exist? Why do those titles exist? They have absolutely no meaning whatsoever. This is even more ridiculous considering both men's titles are in the same match. Sorry for the rant, but as someone who has tickets to both the Knights of Mania and thinks Ronda Rousey is the worst babyface I've ever seen on TV, I was really looking forward to some good additions to the undercard, especially for night one. I really hope Bianca and Becky are healthy and Austin really brings it. Otherwise, Saturday could be a really rough night. We talk about Saturday being a rough night. Sunday could be a rough night other than Lesnar and Reigns. I guess Edge and AJ and RKO and Street Profits is pretty good. But otherwise, it's like, you know, that multi-women's tag match and a couple celebrity matches. It's like a three-match night too. But maybe that's another discussion. We should focus instead on what Chris said with a secondary title. So I'm still not sure that Friday won't lead to a match being added to Mania at the last second. And I'm still not convinced there won't be a Balor defense. What do you think, Jake, in terms of the likelihood of those making it to Mania and if they should or ought to?
Well, it's pretty clear that Vince doesn't give a hoot about either one of those titles. He doesn't spend a lot of time on them. They don't really book strong programs around them unless one of the main event wrestlers is down in the mid card holding one of those championships. You know, that's really the only time they're elevated to getting main event level television time. And that's unfortunate because I think they could be used a lot more effectively than they are. But I think the U.S. champion being in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, and then of course Ricochet having his triple threat, it very well could lead to those matches being, you know, added to WrestleMania if they, you know, go unresolved, or if Priest eliminates Balor from the dray and you know, he demands a chance to beat him at WrestleMania, or whatever the case may be. There's still hope that those titles will end up on those shows, but it feels like they're backing up to the pay window, so to speak. You know, they didn't really tell a story heading into these shows that was satisfying. It's just they got added because they wanted to time out the shows.
What did you make of the first name or the last names being dropped, but not always dropped on the commentary tonight with Angel and Humberto?
Yeah, it seems like they're really inconsistent with how they handle last names in WWE. I don't know why people suddenly lose their last names and regain them at other times. Big E kind of laughs about, you know, how someday he's going to get Langston back and feel like a complete human being again. I don't know what the point of it is, other than Vince likes marketing single names because he thinks that people will remember them, or they fit better on merchandise, or whatever, or they're easier to trademark. I don't know, but it's certainly an obsession of his to shorten people's names as much as possible.
Yeah, and just get your story straight too. Like, I felt like there was quite a bit of confusion even on Cole's part, and usually he's got things, you know, in order.
The same thing happened with Butch a couple of weeks ago, where you had Pat McAfee talking about, well, you might know him from other places with a different name, but Sheamus and Rich Holland have only ever known him by Butch. And it's just like, what? You know, like, he's been on WWE television before. Like, it's a very confusing way to have your fans interpret why you're renaming things the way you are.
Yeah. What have you thought of Ricochet's renewed push? Is there hope, for this to work out?
You know, like,
is he just so marginalized it's too late?
Well, I think everybody recognizes that he's extremely talented in the ring. It's just, can he find a character? And I think he's made some strides in that regard, but, I mean, you know, you saw him do that kind of awkward dance on his way to the ring, and then he kind of called out Humberto after the match, and it was just kind of this, you know, this awkward kind of jumble of buzzwords and slang terms. And I think he's got to find who he is, you know, and I think that's something that that a lot of WWE acts struggle with, because they get a lot of direction and they get told exactly what to say, and you know, it's like the company doesn't really give them much depth to work with, and they have to find a way to squeeze it in themselves with facial expressions and the way that they deliver lines. And some people are better at it than others. And I think Ricochet still hasn't found a way to put the little wrinkles into his character that make him stand out from the crowd. And so, is there hope? Yes, but I think he still has a way to go in that regard.
Is there anything else, Jake, you want to cover on tonight's show? I know there's some basketball games going on that are in the second half right now, and I think we covered most everything.
Yeah, I'm not recalling anything that we didn't touch on.
I mean,
on.
Sami Zayn had a nice promo, you know, just I'm going to, you know, your jacket, what you and your Jackass buddies have been putting you through is nothing fair to what I'll do at Mania. I mean, that was just
I think he's very clearly explaining what's going to happen. It's the exact opposite of what Sami thinks is going to happen. You know, he's going to go into the match and assume that because Johnny Knoxville is a celebrity and it's an anything goes match that he'll be completely unprepared. And they kind of tipped off the fact that, you know, his pranks only work on his goofy jackass buddies. This is going to be a jackass forever sort of match played out in at WrestleMania. Live action jackass is what you can look forward to there.
Did you pay attention to or memorize who was listed in the graphic for the Andre Battle Royal, and anyone surprise you there?
I didn't catch a lot of it, to be honest with you. I was busy, you know, scrambling and typing for my report. So I did happen to see Balor and Priest, but I didn't see a lot of the other performers.
Yeah. Is there anyone, I mean, who you think just in general is a leading contender or obvious candidate to benefit from winning that?
I'm assuming it's going to end up being Balor and Priest that are the final two, and you know, however the outcome plays out there, we could see that lead to a potential match at WrestleMania, or perhaps you have a surprise contestant that wasn't listed there, like an NXT star who's in Dallas for the weekend, come up, and if they have plans for them after WrestleMania, maybe they can make a big splash there.
Yeah, so if I bring up the graphic here, the names that they showed are Jinder Mahal, Shanky, Reggie, R-Truth, Akira Tozawa, Mansoor, Robert Roode, Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Apollo Crews, Commander Aziz, the Viking Raiders, Shelton Benjamin, Madcap Moss, and Cedric. And Drew Gulak. That's right. So not, I mean, I don't even see Omos in there. So I'm assuming Omos isn't in it, or they would have shown him, and he's still going to have somebody, you know, show up on Monday, or even at WrestleMania to challenge him. But I mean, Andre Battle Royal looks like it's just a prelim fest, and it seems like it should come down to Balor and Priest when you look at who's in there, unless they have something in mind for. God, I don't know. I mean,
maybe
kind of buried
Moss. I don't know.
He's in the center, in between Balor and Priest. So if you are going to read into the placement of them and the way Cruz and Aziz have been treated, you know, I don't think Aziz is in line for it, and Jinder isn't at a point where you want to give him any juice. So yeah, I guess it'd be Madcap Moss, if not Balor or Priest, unless they add more to it, because that's about, you know, 17 people. Let's see, 5. But yeah, 17 are on the graphic. So
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to have it end up being 20, and there's 3 surprises there.
Yeah, yeah. Any thoughts on the main event, the 4-way women's match, which we didn't really talk much about? Anything jump out to you, or do you think they accomplished anything, or were meaning to accomplish anything there?
You know, they really have not told anything resembling a story with this, other than these women have all traded wins on TV for the last couple of weeks. I think the only team that hasn't picked up a televised win is Ripley and Liv Morgan. And if they end up winning whatever match, I think it was an 8-woman tag match on Monday, then, you know, I guess that would count as a victory, and everybody would be even Steven at that point. But yeah, there's really no reason to be particularly excited about that feud. I think the match is going to be fine. And you know, if they crown new champions, which I assume would either of the babyface teams, then, you know, who knows what could happen post-Mania. But that division is such an afterthought until they need to have a WrestleMania match that it's hard to get too invested in it.
Yeah, yep. All right, Jake, anything else?
No, I think we covered everything, man. Thanks for having me on.
Cool, yeah. Great to have you on. How can people follow you on Twitter?
You can find me at Barnett Jake with 2 T's on Twitter. And you can also find me over at ProWrestling.net.
Excellent. And you can follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller, and follow our brand at PW Torch. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.